Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Saturday, September 13th, 2008, and this is show number 169. No, I'm not doing the show a day early, and you did not miss the live show on ustream.tv/nosilicast at 5 p.m. GMT minus 8 on Sunday nights. This is a bonus episode of the No Silicast, highlighting the tools I found most interesting at the conference called Demo Fall 08. I have to be honest here. I'd never heard of Demo before Jan Ziff introduced me to Chris Shipley at the All Things Digital Conference in May. Chris runs Demo and graciously invited me to attend the conference as her guest. I don't know how I missed this conference before, though. Demo's been around for like 18 years, and it's a fantastic conference. Well, you know, I love to schmooze with the big guys, making them take their picture with me and all that, but that's not what Demo is about. Demo allows 72 vendors to come on stage, and in 6 minutes, they each get 6 minutes to demonstrate something they've never shown before. It's just a perfect format for somebody like me who has ADD something fierce, because I only listen for the first six minutes anyway. Why talk to me for 30? For the first time, I was able to concentrate 100% of the time. I wasn't goofing around or doing chat or Twittering at all because, man, you blink, you miss an entire demonstration. I couldn't even goof around between the demos because Chris would come out and tell you why you care about the demonstration about to go on. She would always describe the problem to be solved. Well, the conference was 2 days long with about 3 hours straight of content, followed by 2 hours in the exhibit hall and then back for another 3 hours of content. Grueling, but fascinating. One of the things that made Demo so delightful was how well run it was. Chris and her team have been doing this for a long time, and it really shows. With a room for 800 attendees, there were tables for everyone, 4 Wi-Fi antennas along the walls that actually worked, power at every other row, and even very high-speed wired Ethernet in the first 6 rows for the press. Hey, they didn't say printed media, did they? They just said press. I say I count. Well, anyway, when I say high-speed wired Ethernet, I mean really high speed. I checked it. It was 4 megabits down and 6 megabits up. So, you know, I would have been pretty much in heaven even if the conference were lame, but luckily it was not. I did some audio interviews of some of the demonstrators, and I also have some commentary on other ones that I did like. Let me start with one I didn't like, though, just so you realize that I'm not just a big old fangirl yapping about everything being wonderful. I sat next to this guy at dinner who was very enthusiastic about his new product and couldn't wait to tell me all about it. He was a really nice guy, and I feel bad, but his vision was so very misguided. The software they've written runs at the operating system level, supposedly not as an application, but at the OS level. And this is what it does. It creates a video, of the keystrokes that someone with root privileges on the system creates. Okay, I don't quite get video and keystrokes, but anyway, the idea is to track your employees so you can see what they're doing when they have root access. Okay, it's a little weird, but I guess I can see why you might be paranoid. You know, you might really need to understand what somebody's doing. But video? I mean, how would you search video? Maybe a keylogger makes more sense, because then that's just a text file. He said, oh, yeah, don't worry, we'll have metadata to search it. Yeah, okay, that sounds kind of lame. But the real comedy came in when he talked about the system he's going to sell, that it forces the system administrator to ask their manager for permission to have root access. Right. The software kicks in and tracks actions in video only after that permission has been granted. He's got to be kidding me. I was a manager of sysadmins for 18 years, and if I learned anything from that experience at all, it was that I was too stupid uneducated or unskilled to be able to provide any technical advice at all. I mean, you know, they humored me and all, but ask me permission, like, am I allowed to have root privileges right now? I asked him why on earth he thought the manager would be qualified to decide whether someone should use root access, and he said, oh, well, you know, maybe they're not qualified, but many people like to feel as though they're in control. Yikes! That's when I realized that he's probably going to be financially successful. Because you realize the software he's going to sell it to, the people he's going to sell the software to, are the managers. They're going to go, oh yeah, I need to be in control of that. I need to understand. I need to tell them when they're allowed to have root access. Oh, what a horrific mess. Anyway, he told me that their tool is uncrackable. I was taking a sip of water at the time and almost made water come out my nose because I was laughing. You know, I tried to keep a straight face and I asked him if he'd passed it, say, by Black Hat. And he said, "What's that?" Holy cow. Well, one last funny part. I asked him what he thought sysadmins did all day that did not require root access. He couldn't exactly come up with any ideas. Anyway, let's talk about something that is good and interesting. Let's start off with an iPhone application called Say Where from dialdirections.com. I'm standing here with Tu Yen Ho from Dial Directions, Inc., who is going to tell us a little bit about Say Where.
Say Where is bringing speech recognition to the iPhone and other mobile devices. Instead of typing, all you have to do is say a place, like a business name, a business category, a point of interest, a landmark, any address, any intersection, and then you choose your favorite website to launch to get that information. For example, if you want maps, so say an address and then launch your favorite mapping site. The voice entry technology is powered by innovation in speech recognition and geodata technology.
So if the demo that you showed me went to MapQuest, I could, in Say Where, I could identify ahead of time, I don't want to use MapQuest, I'm going to use Google Maps?
Yes, that's right. So right now what we're launching is just a limited set of websites, but our next version will enable users to define what websites they prefer for directions, restaurant reviews, directory assistance, and things like that.
So I think you said earlier that it'll be available in the App Store as a free application as soon as Apple lets it out?
Yes. Right now, we are anxiously awaiting the approval of Say Where.
You enjoy that black hole process that you just wait and pray, right?
That's right. And we're keeping our fingers crossed it will soon be available to consumers. And yes, it will be free.
Now, you also have a service for the lower-end cell phones that most normal humans have, right?
Right. For those of us who aren't lucky enough to have the iPhone and we only have a basic cell phone that services speaking and text, we have a direction service where you literally dial the word directions, D-I-R-E-C-T-I-O-N-S, and that's an easy mnemonic for 347-328-4667. There's our voice-activated service on the back end that will ask you where you want to go and where you're starting from, and you can give any address, any intersection throughout the United States, and we will deliver turn-by-turn driving directions as a text message. This service is also free for consumers. The only thing you pay is whatever your carrier charges you for the minutes and the text message.
Well, great. Thank you very much, Tu Yen. It's an interesting product.
Thank you so much for stopping by.
One thing I noticed was that they sort of talk about it like it's a hand-free system, but Say Where isn't actually hands-free because you do use the iPhone touchscreen to choose the application to find things that you want from Say Where. But the great part is that you do never have to type on the iPhone keyboard. You don't have to type anything, but in particular, you don't have to type the name of what you're looking for. I don't know about you, but the iPhone keyboard for me is actually pretty good for typing normal words and sentences, but when you have to type in someone's name or a company name, it's a nightmare. Anyway, I put the directions phone number, 347-328-4667, in the show notes for you if you want to try it out on a regular phone or if you can't wait for the iPhone application to get approved. If you're interested in e-readers like the Kindle and the Sony e-reader, you might also be interested in something coming out from Plastic Logic. They call it the Plastic Logic device. Plastic Logic has developed a proprietary plastic electronics technology to create an 8.5x11 e-reader targeted directly towards business. This is very much an in-development product, but their demonstration showed how durable the units will be because of the plastic rather than glass screen. I know several people, including my good friend David, who had their screen spontaneously break on their e-readers. Heck, David actually had to contact Sony CEO Sir Howard Stringer himself to get his replaced, because Sony Help Desk would not replace it for him for free. Anyway, so having an indestructible screen on a screen reader sounds like a good plan, especially if it's as big as 8.5x11. They did a little demo, actually it was on video, they showed a guy hitting a glass screen with the heel of a shoe, and of course it just got this bad shattered, you know, the horrible corner to it. But the Plastic Logic screen did not when it was whacked with the heel of a shoe. Not exactly a controlled experiment, because you couldn't tell how hard he was hitting it, but it sure was a memorable way to demonstrate the product. I did get a chance to hold the prototype and some dummy mock-ups, and the plastic Logic is very thin, very light, and had a huge display, as I said. It'll be good to see how quickly it can refresh the screen. It looked pretty good in the demo, but it's not out yet. I think it comes out in 2009, but it'll be interesting to watch for when this comes out to the masses. Well, I'm the one in my family who plans all of our family vacations. And while we always end up on fantastic trips with great hotels, the planning process drives me bonkers. I hate trying to think up new places, trying to decide which hotel to stay in, trying to juggle my family's calendars, and then get concurrence on the whole plan. This next interview about Travel Muse might be exactly what I need.
Hi, I'm standing here with Eric Wood, co-founder of Travel Muse.
Hi.
Go for it, Eric.
Hi, well, I'm excited to talk to you about Travel Muse. Travel Muse is a site dedicated to travel planning and finding the right kind of vacation plans for you. Today, we're launching the social trip planning platform, which allows travelers to plan trips collaboratively with everyone who's coming on the trip and create a list of trips that you'd like to create or like to go on for your entire life. After that, we also allow you to search other people's trips, particularly your friends. And we have a social network that allows you to find the research of people that have gone on great trips that you know about and reuse their research.
Now, one of the things that makes me crazy, I'm the one who plans our travel. And, like, the actual booking of the tickets is the easy part.
Right.
It's all the, well, where do you want to go? How long do you want to stay? I don't want to be gone on my birthday. My daughter's always saying that, you know. And
right.
Just making all those arrangements, it's always so hard and figuring out all the options. Is that going to help me?
Yes, actually, we have a tool called Inspiration Finder. And with Inspiration Finder, you can give it some very sort of vague ideas of things you'd like to do, but you don't know where you want to go yet. So I can put in a destination airport, like you live based out of LAX, and we can put in a number of travelers, say four. You want to travel in the fall because it's coming up, and you want to go for 10 days. And this is all in an Ajax interface. It's like easy drag-and-drop sliders. You can set an accommodation level, budget, and then you get to choose activities that you'd like to do. And we've got a big tag cloud of things that you can do, from rafting and rock climbing to beach vacations and spas. And then we've got this great little map that allows you to zoom out of the world from your home airport to tell us how far you're willing to travel in terms of hours.
Oh, that's fantastic, because There's a limit to how long I'm going to sit on a plane these days.
Especially if you have younger
small
family
children,
members.
No, I just never went anywhere when they were little.
So what it brings back to you are up to 8 results of places that you may not have thought of before. And so here we go. We've got Rio de Janeiro. That's something off the beaten path. Kauai, that's somewhere I've been before. Honolulu. Molokai. On the next page, I've got Barbados and Antigua.
There you go. Love Antigua.
So Antigua is something that would be very interesting. So I'm just going to click on the result, and what I get is a destination page. The destination page is really the hub for all things about a particular place. We've got city guides, hotels, restaurants, attractions, like things to do, scuba diving, whatever it is that you're going to do, and even shopping. And then down below, we've got top places to stay rated by our community and articles. And this is a key thing that we have to offer. We're not just about travel planning. We're also about finding the right information. So we have an editorial staff of up to or more than 40 local experts and professional writers. And so here's an article on last-minute summer saver deals. And like everything on the website, you can just add this to a trip. Now, everything that you see on our site can be added to a trip. And what happens is you get this little list. This is my trip list. And it's like our Netflix queue of travel. You know, so here
someday.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can start planning that Australia vacation I've been saying I'm going to do someday.
Exactly. You know, and this is what happens. You have an idea of something that you'd like to do. People send you stuff, or you come across stuff, and it gets lost because it's not something you're currently planning. Well, here you can store it all in one place. And if you're traveling with, your spouse or whatever, then they can also add that in, and they get updates when you add research into the trip.
That's fantastic, because we're always sending emails back and forth saying, what do you think about this? What do you think about that?
Right, right. So here, I'll add this into a trip, and now I can go to my trip list and see it. And more importantly, I can actually, so here it is down here at the bottom of the list, latest thing I added. I can drag and drop this into any day that I've created here. So I can change the length.
So let me explain what he's doing here a little bit. So he's got a screen that's got day 1, day 2, day 3 of your vacation. and he's dragging things into it. Like, for example, you could say, I'm going to go snorkeling on Tuesday, exactly. That sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, that actually could be really handy. Now, you also can add things from other websites, right?
That's right. So we know that people visit a lot of sites when they plan trips, and we can't possibly provide all the information. So we have a tool called the Travel News Bookmarker. And what it is, it's just a bookmarker that you add into your browser like any other bookmark. How you use it is you go to a great site that you, or someone sends you a great link, let's say, and I'll just go to...
What if I've gone to American Airlines and I found some flights that are good candidates? Can I add those?
Actually, airlines are a little bit difficult because the inventory changes second by second. You probably experience this problem where you start the process and you say, this is a great price. And when you put in your credit card, it says it's no longer available.
Right. But so the flights might be useful still.
Right. So
we could go around this time and get back around this time kind of thing.
Right.
So can you do that?
Well, so there are two different ways you could do that. You could either bookmark a page that isn't going to change. So something that maybe has the flight time on it, but not the particular seat or something like that.
Oh, okay, sure, sure. That's what I mean, the flight options.
Yeah, flight options. Or you can actually manually add items. So it's not just about bookmarking things on our site and bookmarking things around the web. You can also add in things. So, for example, you find some information, you're going to travel to your relative's home or something like that. You need to put in some confirmation information that they've emailed you. You just paste it in, and now it's treated like another piece of information on our site. You can drag and drop it anywhere you want.
Very cool.
So, now I'm going to show you the Add to Travel News button. So, I found a great page on Wikipedia, and I'm going to click this bookmarker that says Add to Travel News. And what you see is a header of our site comes in above Wikipedia and allows me to check off which trip I want to add it to or even a new trip. And I can categorize it and say, oh, well, this is, you know, an attraction that I want to see. And I hit add.
And now that web page is embedded over in Travel Muse.
Right. And when I hit add, it's going to send me right back to the page that I was investigating, so it's not going to interrupt my flow.
Oh, okay.
However, when I go back to Travel Muse, it's already in there.
Well, this sounds like a really cool product, Eric. I'm going to be checking this out, and because I'm the one that does all that heavy lifting, and I hate the process. It's so much work, and I end up with spreadsheets all over the place, and like you guys said on stage, get rid of the manila folder. That would be really nice.
We have a saying around the office. It's about marital harmony.
Thank you very much, Eric.
One thing I should point out, since you're hearing this, is it's spelled M-U-S-E, as in muse, so it's Travel Muse. Anyway, when I tested out Travel Muse before I went over to the booth, I found out that it only returned 4 locations when I asked it to inspire me. I asked Eric about that, and he explained that their system does such intense crawling of the sites because, I mean, they pull everything about that that place they've suggested to you. I mean, you know, cost data and all kinds of stuff. He said that they promised the sites they wouldn't do more than 4 at a time until they got their algorithm tuned a little bit more to be less intense on their sites. So that should be an improvement coming soon. But even with that restriction, I think it's a really interesting site. Check out travelmuse.com for your next trip. One of the most annoying demos at the show was by the folks over at Real Networks, who are famous for doing exactly what they did. They demonstrated a fantastic product that is Windows only. Well, to be fair, there was one whole entire other vendor who demoed a Windows only product, but the other 70 did not. I guess I should confess that there was one vendor that had a Mac-only application. But still, that's 69 who didn't go, you know, with one platform. They were all cross-platform. Anyway, Real claims they're working on a Mac version of what I'm going to tell you about, but it was so frustrating because their app looked really cool. It's called Real DVD, and it's a legal way to rip and organize your DVD collection. Imagine iTunes for DVDs. You stick in a DVD, a commercial DVD I'm talking about, and you have a couple of choices. You can play it and copy it, or just copy it. Believe it or not, you can play a movie real time off of a DVD while it rips the movie to your hard drive. They demonstrated exactly that, so I saw it with my own little eyes. I know it's true. Well, once the DVD is ripped in, they pull the actual album art and other information about the movie from the internet, and it displays beautifully in the player. You can sort by genre, PG-13 type ratings, that kind of thing, title, all kinds of stuff. They even demonstrated how you could keep a catalog of DVDs on an external drive, just plug it in and those movies join seamlessly into your Real DVD library. I'd really like to know how they got the movie labels to allow them to legally copy DVDs, Because I could have sworn it's technically illegal according to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. On my tour through the exhibit hall, I talked to the real guys and I tortured them for coming out with a Windows-only program, pointing out to the guy that 20% of the home market is now in Macintoshes, and why would they want to purposely blow off 20% of the home market? The guy was cool and he said, "Hey, we're working on a Mac version." To which I derisively pointed out, "Oh yeah, that's what you said about RealPlayer 11 a year ago at D5. To which he quietly pointed out, "Well, we did come out with RealPlayer 11 for the Mac with all the functionality we demonstrated at D5. To which I said, "Okay, never mind." Next up is an interview with the general manager of UGA Digital, where he explains the concept behind their product called You Got Photo. Well, I'm sitting here with Nick Fothergill from UGA Digital, who's going to talk a little bit about You Got Photo. So what's the problem you're trying to solve?
We're trying to solve sharing photos from place to place over big distances. And we're trying to solve the problem that Wi-Fi digital photo frame makers are having with getting content to their frames.
So you gave a great example on stage, and I'm going to let you talk about your mom a little bit here.
Okay, well, I'm sure a few of us have had this experience, whether it be with our moms or our dads, and we're sending them photos by email or, you know, with links and stuff, and we're having to provide tech support for them just to view these photos. And it's taken the feeling out of just here's a photo, like it used to be when we sat on the couch together looking at them. So we're trying to take that out of the equation.
Okay, so exactly what does You Got Photo do?
Okay, we allow you to, wherever your photos are stored, if it's Facebook, Flickr, Google, Picasa, DropShots, we allow you to take those photos and deliver them with a drag and drop, a really easy drag and drop into a digital photo frame wherever you have it placed. If it's in, you know, from New York to Toronto, from Taipei to Tokyo, you can drag them in and 10 seconds later they'll show up on the frame that you've paired with your account.
So how do you get rid of photos that you've sent before? Like, there's not infinite storage on the photo frame.
There's no storage on the photo frame.
Oh.
These photos are only being displayed on the photo frame. The photo frames have to be connected in some way, whether that be with Wi-Fi or any other connection.
Continuously connected.
Yes.
Oh,
and
okay.
Once they're connected, so say you got Wi-Fi in your house, if this photo frame is sitting there online, these photos will be continuously displayed. So it's actually, you could call it unlimited.
Oh, wow.
Display of photos.
So can you put them from different services at the same time? This photo
Absolutely.
From Flickr, this one from Picasa?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Does your mom like hers?
She's going to get her first one when I return from San Diego, and I think she is going to like it.
Now, you provide the technology and the software interface, but you guys don't make the frames themselves,
We
correct?
Don't make the frames. We don't host the photos. We just provide the technology, the delivery platform to send from photo source to photo frame. So we support any Wi-Fi digital photo frame that wants to use this kind of technology.
Okay, so do you have companies already lined up that are going to make these frames?
We have... It starts at the chipset level, so our technology has been loaded into a whole bunch of different chips from TI all the way to Magic Pixel to Amlogic, and those are ready to go. And now we're here looking for some companies that would like to roll this kind of functionality out in their frames.
Well, I sure hope you success in this. It sounds like a really good product. Again, it's called?
You Got Photo.
And your company name?
UGA Digital.
Great. Thank you very much, Nick.
Thank you so much.
That really sounded like a cool product to me, and I'm looking forward to it being integrated into some photo frames we can actually buy soon. For some reason, even though I'm a big photo nut job, I never seem to take the time to update the photos in my photo frame. I would totally use this for myself. Well, while I was at lunch, another guy sat down and started talking to me about semantic web. Have I ever explained to you how much I hate IT speak? IT people just love to make up new meanings for real English words and rearrange them until you feel like a dope for not understanding what they mean. I've heard of semantic web a bunch of times, but I'll be darned if I could figure out what it is. I asked the guy to explain it to me, and in one single sentence, he used three more IT speak words. I felt like that episode of Star Trek Next Generation, you know, the one where Captain Picard goes down to this planet, he gets beamed out of this planet by the captain of another ship, and they end up in like this mortal battle, and the two of them are just like going at it, and Picard has no idea why this guy's fighting him, but then a monster comes up from behind a rock, and then they have to fight together instead of fighting against each other. They got to fight the monster, and but the whole time, the captain of the other planet is doing things like, he yells, "Timba," when the walls fell, his arms open wide. And Picard's sitting there going, "What the heck are you talking about?" They were all English words. They all made perfect sense, but not in that order. Well, anyway, the end of the story is that, of course, Data does a bunch of analysis and figures out that this captain comes from a society where they speak only in parables. So apparently there was some great story about Timba when the walls fell and his arms opened wide. But anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, semantic web. What the heck does semantic web mean anyway? Well, finally, this guy kind of sensed my impatience, so he sent me over to the SemantiFind booth to see if they could explain it to me by explaining how their product worked. Here's that interview. We're here with Scott Montgomery from SemantiFind.com, and he's going to try and explain what semantic web stuff is to me. I don't get it.
So semantic web is just a way for information to be used across multiple platforms and interconnecting stuff. So today what we're introducing is a product called SemantiFind. What it's going to do is allow you to add a semantic layer on top of existing search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft. So what I mean by a semantic layer is when you type in something like Apple, we're going to ask you, what Apple do you mean? Do you mean the computer company? Do you mean the fruit? Do you mean the record label? There's actually an album called Apple. We got about 20 different definitions for Apple. So...
So you're putting context behind the question right away?
Exactly, that's right. So right now, if you type in Apple into Google, you're going to get a big jumble of results. Some are going to be about the computer company. Some are going to be about Apple Pie. Some are going to be about the record label. Actually, one of the problems is if you're trying to find about the record label, it's going to be kind of tough because that's not really a popular query. So what we're trying to do is bring a level of meaning to existing search engines to give more meaningful results for stuff that you really want to find.
I want to make sure the people listening understand that even though we're talking about SemantiFind.com, you don't stay there. You go to your regular Google search or Yahoo search or Microsoft search, and it's an Firefox plugin that works with those sites in order to use your tool.
Yes, that's exactly right, yeah. So I just go to our site, download the plugin, and create an account, and then you'll be able to use it with either Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft, and possibly other search engines later.
That sounds pretty cool. He demonstrated a few things for me here, showing me how he could more easily find things. The example with BMW, talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So say I'm buying a BMW right away, and with $4 a gallon gas, I'm kind of concerned with its fuel economy. So I'm going to go to Google, and I'm going to type in BMW and mileage. But what mileage do I mean? Do I mean distance traveled, as in on your odometer, or do I mean mileage as in MPGs, fuel economy, stuff like that? So when I type in mileage, I'm going to get those two definitions. And what we're going to see in Google is we're going to see that some of the results are about high mileage Beamers, old Beamers, and some of the results are going to be about fuel efficiency ratings of Beamers. And what we're going to do is we're actually going to gray out some of the results that we know are wrong about used Beamers.
Because you said specifically, I want miles per gallon, not miles driven.
Yeah, so your mindset is all about fuel efficiency in terms of mileage, not in terms of your odometer reading.
It sounds a little bit like the advanced search capability you can do if you're smart. Like you can spend time in Google saying plus this, minus that,
yeah,
you know.
That's right.
But that's a lot of work. This looked a lot easier.
Yeah, so we're just trying to bring a level of simplicity to searching. We found that over 85% of people are willing to try three or more times to modify their search query to try to get the results they're looking for. And it's really kind of banging your head against the wall, trying to game your search engine into giving you the results that you want. You're really not sure. You know you want to look for mileage, but your search engine doesn't know that which mileage you mean.
Right.
So we're trying to bring that level of sophistication, but make it really, really easy for the average person to understand.
Now, you also said you can save these search combinations?
That's right, yeah. So it's also a way for you to save results that you find. So say 2 weeks later, I'm looking for BMW and mileage again, but I can't remember what I typed in. You know, I spent a while trying to figure it out. I'm never going to find that again on Google because again of the ambiguity Google doesn't really understand what I mean about
Fuel that is my biggest problem. I do everything in Google, but I can't remember what I found last
time. Exactly, that's right. So we're going to do some sophisticated stuff where we're going to analyze how long you've been on the page and stuff like that, all within your browser. It's not sent to us or anything like that. And we're going to try to auto-save that page for you. So the next time you go and try to do the same search query, we're going to give you those results that you've auto-saved. You can also explicitly save it if you want to save a site and build kind of a collection of bookmarks, if you will.
This sounds pretty cool. So how do I get SemantaFind?
We're in a public beta right now. All you have to do is head to the website, SemantaFind.com.
Why don't you spell that for him?
SemantiFind, SemantiFind.
And then later on, you're hoped to be in the Firefox add-ons.
Yeah, we'll be in the Firefox add-on. Yeah, we'll be doing IE pretty quick.
For the four people using IE, you'll be there for them.
We'll also try to integrate with Safari at some point as well.
Great.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. Really enjoyed it. I'll check it out.
Thanks very much, Allison.
Thank you.
Well, I think I have a pretty good idea, at least a vague idea of what Semantic Web is all about. Maybe after I play with this tool SemantiFind on as a Firefox plugin, I'll start being able to figure out exactly how this thing works. Still sounded really interesting anyway. Probably the biggest crowd pleaser at the show was Maverick Secure Mobile. Maverick is a unique product that gives you revenge on someone who's stolen your phone. So here's how it works. If your phone gets stolen, you can retrieve the thief's phone number from their SIM card. You can retrieve all of their contacts in their address book so you can pester the thief's mom, boyfriend, or boss. And finally, after all the data has been pulled from their SIM card, this software turns on this blaring air horn siren noise, turns the screen bright red, and flashes a message that you have pre-programmed into the phone for just this purpose. Get this, the only way they can stop this noise is to pull the battery. So I guess if they put it on an iPhone, they can't even do that. Anyway, if they put the battery back in, the noise and flashing starts right back up again. Well, you may not get your phone back with Maverick Secure Mobile from maverickmobile.in, but you sure will enjoy the experience of losing your phone more than the thief will. The last interview I did was with a woman named Hedley Watson, who was representing a tool called Rockatron. I was especially grateful for the fact that she did the entire interview twice, because I messed up and didn't actually record us the first time through. She's also my hero because she showed me this secret vent in the wall of the exhibit hall where freezing cold air was coming in. That turned out to be really important because it was positively boiling in the exhibit hall, and I was very gracious for her showing me that little trick. Anyway, let's hear what Hadley has to say about Rockatron.
I'm here with Hadley Watson from Rockatron at rockatron.com. Tell us what Rockatron is, Hadley.
So Rockatron is a mobile news service that's completely customizable, and you access it over the phone.
Okay. Why would I want to call the phone? Why would I want to use the phone to learn about news?
So the problem that I've always encountered with radio, and I feel that a lot of people share this view, is that, well, sometimes the things that you want to hear, you have to wait to hear. You have to listen to 30 minutes of material that you don't actually want to hear sometimes.
So that whole Britney Spears thing when you wait for the tech news?
Yeah, exactly. That will never happen with Rockatron. You simply say technology news. It takes you directly to technology news. You hear all about technology.
So where does the news come from?
So we have feeds from, I think we have 50,000 new articles that come in a day, over 3,200 news sources. And actually all duplication, the replicated articles that contain the same material, that's actually eliminated. So you're not going to hear an article or multiple articles about the same thing on Rockatron.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So I get to it from my telephone, though.
Yes, you just call the number 408-907-2323. And you'll hear, "Welcome to Rockatron." You'll be offered a menu of choices, things like international news, business news, technology news. You simply say, "Tell Rockatron what you want." Rockatron's listening.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Now, what if I really want to hear the tech news, but I'm sick of hearing the whole anything about the iPhone? I'm just really tired of hearing about the iPhone.
Something really unique about Rockatron is that you can also log on to the web, and you can log in with your phone number, customize your news. So you can actually give it keywords that you want to hear about and things you don't want to hear about. So if you want to hear about Apple news, but you don't want to hear about the iPhone anymore, a yes keyword is Apple, a no keyword is iPhone. You'll get only articles in technology about Apple that don't involve the iPhone.
Now, will it just start giving me only articles about Apple at that point, or?
Any articles about Apple won't include the iPhone, essentially.
Oh, okay.
There are other articles. However, the Apple articles will be prioritized, so you'll get those sooner, essentially. So it doesn't necessarily put only Apple articles at the top of your news feed, but it will give you more of them at the top of the news feed.
So this is really for news on the move, but you don't want to hear a traditional radio to get it.
Exactly. It's actually even better for on the move. I listen at the gym because it's completely voice controlled. No pressing buttons. You don't have to press one to listen to business, press three to listen to entertainment.
Oh, that's good.
You simply say entertainment news or technology news, and it takes you right there. It's
so you still look like a lunatic when you're working out, though, because you're talking to your cell phone, right?
Oh, definitely.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
and the
good.
Bluetooth headsets
it's
make
got
it
that
worse.
Feature. Awesome,
yeah.
Awesome. Now, so is this going to put podcasting out of business?
Oh, definitely not. We're actually thinking that it really...
Good answer.
It complements the podcasting business we're thinking, because we do use a text-to-speech engine for the reading of the articles. It's a very sophisticated one, but it does sort of lack that human element. And also, with podcasts, you get a lot more... With podcasts, you get a lot more specific, in-depth information, and you actually have a human connection there. So we're actually thinking it's going to complement podcasting in the sense that users will listen to it 5 to 7 minutes a day, get their news, and then for the things they like to listen to in depth, podcasting's still there and viable.
So I don't have to listen for a half an hour to get my little bit of tech news. I can get a lot more efficiently.
Exactly. Any article you don't want to listen to or that you find irrelevant, you just say next article.
So where do you guys get the news?
We have over 3,200 news feeds. I think 50,000 articles come into Rocketron daily.
1,000 a day. So all that's being parsed on the back end on a server someplace.
Exactly. They're sorted out so that there's no duplicate information. So two articles on the same topic won't come up. You'll only hear one of the articles. Usually it's the more recent one.
Wow, this sounds like a pretty good service. And that phone number, one more time.
408-907-2323.
And it's called Rocketron at rocketron.com.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Hadley.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed talking to Hadley. We talked about all kinds of other stuff. Like she went to Harvey Mudd and we talked about her school and what it was like to go there. It was just a lot of fun. Anyway, I put the phone number for Rocketron in the show notes. Again, it's 408-907-2323. So you can go test it out yourself and see what Rocketron can do for you. Thanks again, Hadley, for your patience with me. Well, now that I've talked about everything that excited me at demo, I also wanted to tell you a couple of things. First, I had taken copious notes during the show. You know me, I take notes on everything, all of which were lost the next day when I had a hard drive meltdown. I did all of this from the top of my head, aided by my photos, which luckily I had not downloaded yet, but in any case, I never delete them from my memory card until I do a backup, and by the terrific conference book the demo people put out. It has all the information you need to trigger your memory after the brain blast of listening to 72 vendors in 2 days. I also wanted to tell you that the interviews were all done using my trusty Zoom H2. By the way, that's spelled Z-O-O-M. I had somebody ask me, was I recording on a Zoom? No, it's a Zoom, Z-O-O-M. And of course, it's from a company called Samsung, which is not Samsung, Samsung, S-A-M-S-O-N. Man, that's confusing. But anyway, I was really happy with the Zoom H2. I know you can hear noise in the background, but you would not believe how loud it actually was in that demo hall. Zoom H2 really came through like a champ. I must confess that I did use Sound Soap on a couple of those that were really bad, but I find the process kind of annoying and time-consuming, and worse yet, the sound gets a little distorted. So some of them are just as I recorded, but some were a little bit adjusted. Anyway, I know you guys are tech geeks, so you'd like to know what I did the recordings with. Finally, if you want to watch any of the 6-minute demos from the show, they're beautifully organized over on the demo.com website. There's a separate page for each product with all of the pertinent facts about them, along with a video of each demo. It's worth spending some time there to even catch, more than I was able to tell you about today. You might want to go watch videos I didn't even talk about. And if you ever get a chance to attend demo, I really encourage you to do it. I met some fantastic people, and I really felt that I was seeing the cutting edge of what's coming in technology. As always, keep up the great feedback by emailing me at nosillacast@gmail.com and follow me at twitter.com/podfeed. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.